Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh, it is a glorious morning in the fine city of Chicago. It's June 17th, and Tom Thayer is sitting in with us. Tom drove in from Lake Forest and Joliet and all parts thereof to assist us this morning. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm an in-house guy. You know that. I like being behind the microphone, seeing your smiling face, getting ready to talk the world of Chicagoland sports and beyond with big golf tournaments starting and other events around the world, NBA basketball, who – Somebody should start an NBA how to shoot free throw camp.
Oh boy.
Because it's deciding and it's a factor in some of these games, and
sure is.
And I think every sport in the landscape of sports, the injury bug is biting them some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, you're right. There are injuries all over the place. Certainly the Cubs, you thought might benefit from an injury. Jacob DeGrom looked awful good over the three innings we saw him, but he left with a shoulder injury, and that is that's a blow to the Mets and to their hopes and dreams. And hopefully, he's not as bad as it looked. A guy with a shoulder injury leaving a game after three innings, and man, he was handling the Cubs pretty good. So you thought there was an opportunity, but it didn't happen for the Cubs yesterday. Certainly. You look at that, the White Sox and all of the injuries and the fact that they were without Yoan Moncada over the last four or five. And it's, you know, you're already down Aloy, you're down Louis Robert, Nick Madrigal's out, and now you add Yoan to that. It just seems like it's piling on, and yet they find a way to win a game and then maybe lose a game and then maybe eventually win again. I don't know how you would describe that, but that was pretty frustrating watching it.
Yeah, you know, the DeGrom issue, you know, there are so many different tentacles to that story, because when you talked about the buildup of that Mets series and you talked about DeGrom pitching, it was almost a foregone conclusion there was no way the Cubs were going to beat him. And it kind of was looking that way until he did get hurt. And then you think about him getting hurt, and you say, wow, the Cubs have an opportunity to climb back into this thing and steal a game that you thought you had no chance of winning. And then, you know, they kind of collapsed. It was a series of walks, a bad inning, and they were, you know, bringing guys to the plate. The Mets were repeatedly. And then when Zach came on and said, hey, the issue for DeGrom is a shoulder issue. Now, is it a compensation injury? Is he compensating for the injuries that he's faced in his lower body and the other issues he's had? He's trying to throw just shoulder strong. And is that the reason he got hurt? So it's really an interesting series or interesting injuries around the league, because, you know, no one ever wants anybody to get hurt, no matter what sport they are playing, male, female, basketball, or a contact sport. And when you see a guy who's that talented, because he's not a Randy Johnson standing up on the mound. He's not, you know, 7 feet five where his hand is 5 feet away from the batter. He's a normal size guy that has unbelievable pitching ability. And when you hear about a shoulder injury, yikes for that sport and that position.
I agree with you. And I got to tell you, when you look around Major League Baseball, the injuries are one of the big stories. There's so many players that aren't available. It's a big story.
Yeah, but, you know, to me, I can't blame the game. I got to blame what was your training routine right after the last season started? Who are the trainers that have a hands-on approach to each one of these guys, and what are they doing to get them prepared? And, you know, I know it's 2 days beyond, but the guy they sent home 2 days ago in the Cubs game that got tabbed out at first, that just is recovering from a hamstring injury.
Right. The Cubs player, you're saying.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to go Tyler Glasnow.
No.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's another, you know, that's a whole, I mean, we could sit
that's
here
a whole, yeah, right,
and
right
talk about this freak issue, because there's so much blame they're putting on this substance issue where,
right,
you know, it's a foreign substance. You know, I mean, everybody, even Garrett Cole last night, he wanted to defend the use of a foreign substance. And,
it's interesting because the Glasnow thing, he blamed that for his injury.
Right.
The problem is it's a UCL, which is a wear and tear type injury.
Right.
So I don't think because he wasn't getting a good grip and because he squeezed the ball more that's the reason he was hurt. I really don't. I think it's wear and tear, and that injury might have been out there for him regardless of the substance thing. But I do think it's fascinating that so many guys really need that. And I was talking to someone yesterday just about, you know, how guys sweat and how it's hard to get a grit. You know, you're out there on the mound, it's 100 degrees out, and you're working, and there are just different people that sweat more than other people, and you can get your hand, you know, you need something. Now, they got a rosin bag right behind you.
Right.
So maybe we got to get something like that going. But I agree with the idea that they should come up with some sticky stuff that just helps you get a better grip of the ball and be done with it.
Right.
And not worry about everybody has the same thing. And, you know, hopefully it's not something that's going to operate like spider tack and make all this rotation on the ball. But the idea of gripping the ball and making sure you don't hit a guy in the head is a pretty good idea to me.
Could they case the ball in some type of substance that made it the same for every single person on the field, outfielder, infielder, pitcher, and something?
I think that's a fair comment. I think that part of the problem is that they've been changing the baseballs. There hasn't been a uniformity with the actual ball itself. If you think about, you know, some of the they were like, I think Titleist made balls for a while because they were getting run out of the park, and then they kind of, okay, we're tightening this up. They've been changing the baseball itself for 20 years. So get some consistency with that.
You know, I'll kind of tell you somewhat of a relatable substance story that comes from football. So when I play in the NFL, and we would put on our jersey, and then they started tapering jersey to such a tightness that you couldn't get a lot of grip. And then we would put two-face carpet tape on our shoulder pads and then lay our jerseys over that, and then they would stick directly to our shoulder pads. Then we would go into the shower, wrap our head in a towel, and spray down the back of our jersey and any touchable area by defensive players with a silicone spray. So now, if you think you're going to grab my jersey, yank, arm over, grab my jersey, arm under, rip, pull, and, you know, the make you susceptible for a disengagement of a defensive lineman against us, they would slip off the grip.
Wow.
And so,
that's wild.
Yeah, and so, and it, we would all do it, you know. It was, so then they said, okay, well, you can't do that anymore. So now we're going to start checking your jerseys before the game. And if anybody comes out, so they put a list in the locker room. Boom, 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 has to go to these officials, and then they check your jerseys. And then hopefully if you do find a substance on your jersey, you can either be removed or they'll remove your jersey. You'll have to change. And so we were playing the Green Bay Packers one time, and the first play of the game, boom, we go, and Jay goes and grabs the nose guard, has his hands inside, and he's got so much Vaseline on the interior of his armpits that the very next play, Jay fumbled the snap because he had so much leftover Vaseline. Reported it to the official. The official brought him to the sideline, and they made him change his jerseys. And so then okay, now it's all out there, man. There is no more foreign substances on the jersey. You're not going to be able to get away with it. So stop. And it stopped. Okay, so now no one is putting all this secret sauce in their jerseys to help themselves. So finally, when the rules came out and it was equal for everybody, it was equal for everybody. So I think with the baseball deal, if you can somehow find a way to help the pitchers, if they do have more health security in their arm, then give everybody the equal chance.
Well, was it Stick'Em? Was that the stuff that the defensive backs would have?
Lester Hayes used to dip his hands in it. Yeah,
and he would he'd just pick up debris as he was playing the game because he had the idea being you could grab a ball and you're going to get a better chance to catch it or whatever. And that's extraordinary.
Well, when I was at Notre Dame, we used to paint our hand pads the color of the opponent's jersey. And so we would be less susceptible to officials seeing our hands outside the framework of the body. But during the course of sweating throughout the time of the game and falling on the ground, a lot of that fresh paint was coming off on our jerseys and their jerseys. So, we played Tennessee. By the start of the game, we'd have bright orange, caution gloves. By the end of the game, they'd be spotted and all over everything.
I don't think that's cheating in any way. I think that's kind of gamesmanship. I think that's cheating is somebody grabbing your jersey and using it to kind of move you around. All you're doing is counteracting that. Do you see what I'm saying? Like I mean I know it's crazy when you start talking about the different substances and everything, but I don't know that I consider this cheating. Maybe the spider tack, just because it's changing the game and it's gotten to a point. I mean, there are guys that have made a fortune that have been using this stuff. You just mentioned Gerrit Cole. He's got the richest contract in baseball. Trevor Bauer had himself a massive contract. Were those fueled by the use of spider tack, whatever, tiger grip, whatever the hell you call this stuff? And if it was, oh, boy. If they change the rules, you may have spent some money you needn't have.
The psychologist of each one of these teams is going to have to really spend a lot of time with the pitching staff. The one thing that frustrated me, and listening a couple weeks ago to Steve Stone, the Sox were playing a team where the pitcher had a red glove, and Steve could see a dark spot on the inside of his glove, and the pitcher would touch it, and he would get some tackiness from it. And it was kind of frustrating going, wow, if that's illegal and you see it this close in the game, why doesn't that message get to the umpires and, you make some type of adjustment? So I think the more conversation you have about it around the league, the more momentum it gets to do something about it.
Stoney, during the broadcast yesterday, mentioned that I think Jason, the game was dragging. He asked him if he was one of these guys who watched a lot of soap operas.
Were you one of those guys who watched soap operas on the road? I know baseball players did that a lot back in the day.
I didn't, but I had a chance to appear on All of My Children.
Really?
Yeah, I turned it down.
What?
Yeah. Didn't want to get up that early.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, look how things could have changed. I wouldn't be here sitting with you. Wouldn't have enjoyed this because I might have been catapulted into soap opera, whatever it was. Yeah, didn't do it.
Think of how much more quickly Susan Lucci would have won her Emmy as that ball is hit to right field on a line. It's going to get by Lamb.
Erica Kane, the most looked over Emmy Award winner in soap opera history.
Apparently you've been one of those guys that's watched some soap operas.
Well, it's All My Children. It's not All of My Children, as Steve put it. So I think back in the day, because of Hallis Hall was so small, when you did have lunch, there was a meeting room right across from the big meeting room that we met. Right before practice, that guys would go down there and sit a little bit or watch a little bit of All My Children. And there was one right before All My Children that, I can remember guys like Jim Harbaugh sitting down there watching.
I remember when General Hospital was a big thing. And I was in college and people would have that on all the time. Like, you'd be like, what's going on? And that someone would give you the storyline. It was hysterical.
Yeah.
Dustin wants to jump in. What were you going to say?
No, just that they're both still on the air. It's crazy. And although, like, they never stop. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen either of those shows in hundreds of years.
It's on in the house. It's like background noise.
Is it really?
As a kid, I remember it was always on. My mom would be like doing stuff around the house, and it was just on, and you'd be like, what is this?
That is hysterical.
And they never seem to do like other things, like the actors on that on those shows.
They
like,
never seem to
they're
break
only
out.
The, you know, other you watch a movie or a TV series now, and they're, you know, Ross from Friends is this guy from this and that guy, and you're like, no, he's Ross. But these soap opera characters, at least as far as I know, they always seem to just stay that person.
Huh. Cliff, all my children. It's been Cliff for 35 years.
Can he's you not imagine like, if Stoney was on a soap opera still?
Right.
Well, it made my head jerk back in the broadcast.
I had the same response, Dustin. I had the same response. That's so funny. I really did. I was like, what? You know, and it really could have changed. I mean, soap opera stardom is a thing. You really can.
Sure.
And I think there are. Who was the football player that was? Wasn't one of the Denver guys? He's a broadcaster. Didn't he play some police character on one of the soap operas?
Mark Schlereth.
Yeah.
Played on General Hot. One of the big.
Yeah,
big
he
ones.
Was.
Yeah.
He had a role. Yes, yeah. Yes. He did okay with that. I've got to tell you, Tom. You as a you know a big burly handsome man, you would definitely have found some soap opera stardom.
If I had the hair, if I always tell people if I had the hair of Howie Long, I'd be in Hollywood. But I know it's a joke because I sweat too much. I can never wear one of those nice suits that they have on. And,
oh God, yeah, you'd have sticky stuff coming out of your suit to tie it all together.
Imagine Stoney. Hello, Erica.
Stoney could pull it off. I mean, he'd still be very good on that. We would just miss all of his acumen. I mean, my God, is there anybody that you've ever watched that can you know, predict a game? As he calls a game, he says things, and it's like he looks like he's getting ready to hit a home run. Boom. Like he recognizes things. I mean, Stoney should be running a team. Okay, so the Cubs, they did strike out 16 times. They've been striking out a lot against the Mets. Now, the Mets have really good pitching. But, you know, we mentioned that one of their really good pitchers, DeGrom, left the game. But he was striking out Cubs before he left. So that's not good. And they are – the weirdest thing about it seems like Milwaukee checks the Cubs score and then follows suit. So if you know, their lead in the division has not grown and it has not shrunk. It remains the division. It's pretty astounding that you could go through this kind of struggle and remain in first place. It's good for the Cubs that Milwaukee isn't playing particularly well.
But is four of the five teams above 500, the only one is Pittsburgh Pirates that are at the bottom of the barrel?
Well, and that would seemingly indicate that they're all in contention.
Right.
They're all within three or four games, I believe, right? Three games? So I'll have to look at the standings.
You know, I was talking to a broadcaster from the West Coast, and we were talking about baseball around, you know, the whole landscape of Major League Baseball. And he says, well, the Cubs are good and they're going to win their division, but the San Diego Padres are the best team on the West Coast and, you know they're going to be the most difficult to overcome. But, you know, I didn't see that from the Padres when the Cubs went there and played them because they were up to the challenge and they looked like a good baseball team. Now, against the Mets in the last couple of days, I didn't see the good that I saw that came from San Diego, but I also didn't see it against the Giants. You know, I was a little worried there when they went out there. I don't know if that's because they're going out there into still the Midwest body clock. It's still a 9 o'clock start, you know.
That's always a thing in the NFL. That's always a big deal when teams are crossing the country and playing at different odd hours. I mean, you got to be a really good team to be able to do that. Now, you're right. They seem to have the Padres number. They've been beating the Padres both home and away. And that series is over for the year. And we'll find out if they end up matching up in the playoffs. And wouldn't that be great if they took on a team that they just happen to be, just have their number. I'm the boogeyman team and I'm going to beat you. That would be wonderful. All right, we got to get to the 5 at 5. It's Mully and Hall. We have the great Tom Thayer here today. He's been out of practice. We're going to pick his brain on the Bears, and we're going to have some fun. Mully and Hall on the Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
The White Sox beat Tampa in a pulse-racing fashion yesterday to win the series and take their place as the team with the best record in baseball. Do you still consider the bum slayers after sandwiching a sweep at Detroit between series victories over the Blue Jays and Rays? Do you have to see how they do against Houston before making that call?
No, I don't need to know how they do against Houston before determining that they're a good baseball team. They're a good baseball team. You don't get that kind of record. You don't get the best record in baseball unless you're a pretty good team. So I get it. I mean, I've heard all the bum slayer stuff. I get it. You beat up on Detroit, and that's why you look like you're a good team. I think it's important to beat a team like the Jays. I think the Blue Jays are a team you could see down the line. Certainly the Rays are a really good baseball team, and you saw part of that yesterday, their ability to come back in that game when even the manager looked like he had given up on that game. They left the pitcher in after they were just going to eat some innings, and I don't think he imagined they would be able to come back in that game, but the Sox bullpen wasn't outstanding, or they had some players that weren't outstanding in terms of allowing some runs. It wasn't the one big inning. It was, you know, it was kind of those death by a thousand cuts things. But, yeah, listen, we've talked about this before. You have to be better than other teams. You don't win a division if you're not better than other teams. And you don't build a nice record unless you're better than other teams. Do you have to be better than the best? Well, at the end of the year, it helps. But I don't think that you determine whether a team can, you know, it's nice to beat teams with a winning record, don't get me wrong. And the question includes the idea that they beat the Jays and the Rays around that sweep in Detroit. But fact of the matter is, the Sox beat Detroit and managed to rest some guys, and maybe that helped them beat Tampa. So that's pretty good stuff.
You know, I look at it like the big picture, little picture. The big picture of the season is trying to get yourself in a playoff position by the best record that you can possibly achieve. And that's the goal, is get into the playoffs, get yourself in a position where you're competitive at the end of the season. And, you know, there's a lot of things that's going to be put in your memory bank that you're going to draw back from when you get towards the end of the season. You start talking about the adventures of what you've gone through. I'm more impressed with the comeback win. And I know what they gave up. I know that they had a lead that everybody thought was insurmountable during the course of the game. But when you get kicked in the face, do you allow the person to keep kicking you in the face? Do you eventually stand up in a difficult scenario and get yourself in for an opportunity to win the game? And that's what the Sox did. So they came back and they were able to take a little spark out of the Rays when they did, you know, have such a big lead. Then they gave it up, and then all of a sudden they had to get back in the fight, and they didn't show fatigue, and they showed the resiliency of being having an opportunity to get back and get themselves into the opportunity to win this game. And if you would have went in the locker room after the game was over and you really didn't know what was going on, just the excitement, the enthusiasm would have just shown that the Sox won a game. So I like the fact that they keep hunting to put themselves in a playoff opportunity at the end of the year, but to come back after giving up the lead and come back and win the game, that was what the people are going to remember leaving the stadium.
What triggers me here is the bum slayer part of this.
Yeah.
Again, we've talked about it before, but we're going to keep talking about it because this out-of-town stupid narrative that keeps going on. The Sox didn't pick their schedule. This is the division they play in. This is the American League for the most part. Of course, there will be some interleague play going on. You can only beat the teams that are in front of you. And again, imagine, Mully, you and I had this conversation yesterday. Imagine if they were fully stocked right now, right?
Yep.
I mean, imagine if they had no injuries right now or had just had a injury, like Lance Lynn missing a start because of oblique soreness, something like that, right? Or Grandal missing because his knee was a little tender. Okay, fine. But when you're talking about Aloy hasn't played a game, Louis
yeah.
Robert has missed more than half of the half that we've played so far
right.
in baseball, and they're 4.5, 5 games ahead of the next best team in this division. Who cares? They didn't pick to play in the crap division. Just happens this year that it's not as good as it has been in the past. So stop that narrative. Mm-hmm. And that was a thrilling game yesterday. It was, and that's what's wild about it. The first segment of the show, if you're just joining us, we ended up talking about Steve Stone having an opportunity to play in a soap opera because the game had gotten
yes,
so out of hand
right.
and boring yep. in the Sox favor. And then the Rays picked, and all of a sudden we had an error by the second baseman who probably shouldn't be playing second base because of what? Another injury. Right? There was another injury, right. so we had the backup's backup playing second base.
That's only his second career error, by the way.
Right, I'm not picking
that.
On it. I'm just saying. That was what
yeah.
kind of ended up putting the Rays in the position to tie the game.
Right.
And then we had the dramatics of the extra innings. And again, if you're anti the extra innings, and it helps, I guess, that the Sox won, but that is fun with that guy on second. Right? There was a ball, the Rays, the first time they had it, there was a ball hit right to the wall. And they caught it at the wall. The guy was at second, had to go back. He's basically standing at third base hoping that it would get bumbled or go out of the park, and he's just going to walk home. But then he had to go all the way back to second. Same thing for the Sox. They got that hit by Abreu. They get the runner to third, and Yaz cranks it over into the right field corner, and they walk off win. That's fun. Baseball needs more fun. That's fun. I liked it.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
Given the White Sox serious injuries to essential personnel and the fact they were without Yoan Moncada the last two games, should TLR be in the conversation for manager of the year? Would the Sox have the best record in baseball if Rick Renteria was still manager? Would they be doing even better with someone else in the dugout?
I think it's too early in the season even to have conversations about manager of the year because there's so much of as yet left to play out. However, when you look at the consistency of the White Sox and their approach inside the dugout and on the field, I think Tony has done a really nice job of keeping this group of guys together and come out here and being supportive and, you know, having a lot of supportive enthusiasm. I was not on board when they hired Tony La Russa, so I'm getting to kind of learn more about him when I see him in the press conferences, and I know that there's a couple of gaffes maybe that he's had to accept responsibility for, but it's all, you know, how the team is playing under the injury issues that they've been going through, and God, what a punch in the face the Robert and Eloy Jimenez injuries were at the beginning of the season. Because as being a fan of baseball, and you see the star marquee names, those are a couple of the guys that are just talked about even throughout the offseason. And when they get injured and you say, oh, my God, all is lost, then nothing's going to be good going forward. And then they're playing the type of baseball on a regular basis that they have been. But I think when you look at guys like Tim Anderson and Abreu, God, they do so much for just the feel inside the dugout. Maybe they have as much of effect on the team and the players that the manager does at this point. I'm not against Renteria. I kind of like the guy. But I do like what Tony has been able to do, how he's been able to keep this group together. And I think he probably gives a lot of important information to the younger coaches on that staff, whether you're from the bullpen or on the bench, that through his experiences in baseball life can be beneficial in decision that he helps them make.
Yeah, you know, we've talked to Steve Stone a couple times, and he said it on the air, that Tony is managing for the end of the year. That he's doing a lot of things, and his concern is not in the right now as much as it is in getting through the season and where you're going to be when everything kind of comes to its conclusion. I got to tell you, I had three different friends independently text me about Tony La Russa doing a great job managing after that game. And I laughed, and I said to Dustin yesterday when we chatted, I said, if they lost that game, we'd be tearing them apart. If they somehow, after being up whatever it was, 4-0 and 7-2, we would have really gone to this morning would be about, the failures of the manager as much as anything else. But instead, they come back, and that's an amazing quality. You're really correct in pointing that out, Tom. They're able to come back, and they're able to and he actually said that when he was asked about the Rays coming back. He said, we share that quality, or something along those lines. And I agree with him. So La Russa, it's like he's an old captain. He's an old sea captain, and he's been on the sea so many times, he understands what the path is and how to have the ship stay afloat. And with all the injuries and everything else, I'm with you. I like Ricky Renteria, great guy. I think I've told this story 1,000 times. He bounded off the stage to hug a man who was like kind of a guy with like special needs who thanked him for being an inspiration to him. It literally bounded off the stage at the fan convention and ran up and hugged the guy. I think he's a prince of a guy. I thought it was a great moment, and it always stayed with me. And I hated the way that his tenure ended, because they did make the playoffs, and he's not going to be the guy that. You know, he's always going to be a guy that was kind of a A to B guy, not an A to C guy, because that's what's happened in his career. And I feel bad for him about that. But I don't know that they'd be doing this with him. I don't know that. I know they're a good baseball team, but I think La Russa is doing something to keep this ship afloat.
If you're watching us on Twitch, I'm going to answer this question like our guy,
you're in Ricky
the lasting
mode.
Image. Yeah. The old linebacker
pose,
hands
yeah.
on the thigh pad, bent
watching
over,
kind
of sucking a little air when they're out in Oakland playing the A's back last time they were in the postseason. They could have done a lot worse than Tony La Russa as their manager in the choice, and I don't know how much better you could have made a choice. You could talk about the guy who's up in Detroit right now, but yep. He's like Captain Cheater. So every time, especially now with what's going on with Tiger Stick or whatever it's called, Tiger Tacky, like you think that guy's all about that stuff too. He knows all about it. Come on. So they could have done a lot worse. And if we're going to talk about La Russa being up for postseason hardware, you got to talk about the general manager also being in the conversation for postseason hardware. Because the two of them, even though they were kind of... could you call it almost a blind date? Like it was arranged.
An arranged marriage, yeah.
Arranged marriage, blind yeah. date kind of thing. But it's working out. Like, the general manager, Rick Hahn, picked the groceries, and now Tony's doing a pretty decent job cooking. But to your point, had they blown that game yesterday, the use of that bullpen, unbelievable.
Right,
you're like, what
right.
in the wide world of sports is going on? And so that's the part where Is the team bailing out La Russa, or has La Russa actually set some type of culture? And I think that's still to be determined.
Great question.
What did you make of the Cubs' offense against Jacob deGrom, who entered the game not allowing a run in 25 and a third innings, dating back to May 25th? DeGrom had driven in 5 runs and only allowed 4 all season before facing the Cubs. Does that make you feel better?
Yeah, you know, I didn't think, I thought that they were in serious trouble with Jacob DeGrom. He was dominating. And, you know, was it Alcantara? Somebody had a good at bat against him. But for the most
part,
and it struck out at the end of it. But I think that it was really difficult to face a guy like that because he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. The fact that he left did not give you the kind of bump that I thought you'd get, quite frankly. I thought him leaving the game was going to open up a lot of opportunity, and it didn't. And, you know, I think it was, you know, you always wonder about that thing, that kind of an injury. If he's out for a while, does that help the Cubs down the line? You know, when Tyler Glasnow goes out, he's like the only right-handed starter. The White Sox aren't very good against righties, but they dominate left-handed pitching. The Rays have 4 lefties in their rotation left. So does that become, you know, something to consider when you think about matchups later on in the year and the playoffs, etc.? I felt bad that DeGrom went out just because I like watching good pitching and he's overpowering.
Well, the beginning of the question, what did you make of the Cubs' offense against Jacob DeGrom? What off? There wasn't any. I think the only guy that hit a ball was Rizzo until he hit his home run. And but
that's right.
There really wasn't any. They were braggadocious about the amount of strikeouts, the amount of batters that he was facing without a hit up until that point. And he was on a record setting, or he did set. You know, he was on a record setting pace. I think when you know, we have the opportunity to see sports greatness wherever it is. You kind of enjoy seeing the greatness and the way how just the concentration, the ability, the sustainability. And then when you have a guy that's a pitcher and all of a sudden they talk about a shoulder injury, there is concern. I'm concerned for him individually. I'm not concerned about the Mets because
right.
I'm a Chicago fan. But I really you know, it was kind of a disappointment that in no way, shape, or form could anybody put a bat on the ball. And, you know, look, everybody's talked about what he has, 128 pitchers coming into the game that are over 100 miles an hour. And I don't think, you know, it's not something that you can just say, oh, I could do. No, we couldn't. We couldn't even get the bat off of our shoulder. However, these guys are Major League Baseball players, and If DeGrom would have pitched as long as they want him to pitch, 7 innings, 8 innings, whatever, and the Cubs had absolutely no success at all against him, I think we'd come away feeling worse about their effort than, you know, even the fact that they, you know, you lose the game, but, you know, he was not giving those guys any opportunity, and they weren't creating any opportunity for themselves, so... I think the story around baseball is going to be about the injury issue, but here in Chicago, you talk about the lack of offense against a pitcher with those qualities.
Braggadocious. I like that. Braggadocious. That's the word of the day. We can put that on a t-shirt. Braggadocious. He was dominating, to Tom's point. They did absolutely nothing. They did nothing all night. They struck out 16 times as a team. DeGrom had 8 of those strikeouts. He struck out the side in the second. He also struck out the side in the third. He only faced 9 Cubs batters, 8 of which struck out. That's dominant. That's as dominant as you can get. Now, the Mets got to sit him down. They cannot mess around with this guy, or it could be really, really bad. I don't care for DeGrom. I don't like how... Don't you need... I mean, Mully, come on. Don't you have to have a capital letter to start your last name? It drives me nuts, the back of that jersey. I've talked about this before when the Mets beat the Cubs a few years back before the Cubs won the World Series. The little D to start the spelling of a last name just drives me nuts. And I am not the English major wordsmith on this show, clearly. So 8 out of the 9 batters he faced, he struck them out. And if he had stayed in the game, the Cubs might have struck out 20 times instead of 16 times. I'm actually glad they're playing later on today because I think this is one of those games you got to get that bad taste out of your mouth and you got to get back out in the field and get something going. And hopefully they're going to do that tonight right here on the Score.
I completely understand the questions that are going to come, you know, each day.
If Andy Dalton is QB1 and Justin Fields is number 2 and QB in waiting, then what is the plan for Nick Foles? Has he been declared the number 3 guy as a way of driving him out of town? Do you understand the hierarchy of the position, and can you please explain it?
Well, Nick Foles declared number 3 because, you know, of the situation they're in with Andy and Justin. But, you know, Nick Foles, the best thing that can happen for the Bears is whatever opportunity Nick gets, whether it's in the preseason or training camp, is to play well and stay healthy. And there's a quarterback injury around the league. And if they have to move him, then, you know, here's a guy immediately that comes in with experience, can probably digest enough of your system to go out there and play within a week's time. And I've seen it done before. My last year when I was playing for the Dolphins and Scott Mitchell got hurt, they brought in Steve DeBerg, and within a week's time, he started the game. So there is examples of it in the past. But when you look at Matt referring to Andy Dalton as number 1 and Justin Fields number 2, you know, here's a list of the roster from the mandatory minicamp, and you see the amount of names on there. When you break the huddle, there has to be a first group, second group, third group, and there is that depth chart. And that depth chart is negotiable and earnable. So it's no surprise that Andy Dalton is the number 1 quarterback right now. He has the most experience in the NFL. And Andy's not just a stopgap. He's a guy that makes the position competitive and, you know, makes Justin Fields earn the opportunity to become the number 1 quarterback. And that's what every backup strives for. You know, when I got to the Bears, I was a backup, and all I did is sat at the edge of the bench just chomping at the bit, waiting for my opportunity to get in the game. And then when an injury presented itself, I took advantage of that opportunity. And that's the same thing that every one of these backups are doing. Not just Justin. Every single one of them are waiting for their opportunity to earn the right to become a starter. So I like the earned opportunity. I don't like the given opportunity. And I know that when they signed Andy Dalton, they brought him in here to be the number 1 quarterback. But, you know, that's just the way you sign some of these veterans and you put them in that position. But you have enough forewarning saying, look, you got to learn our system. You got to die. You have to understand what you're doing when you get out there, and you got to make that position competitive. Andy Dalton's making the position really competitive. Now it's the responsibility of Justin Fields to be able to make it so competitive that he shows off his traits to unseat Andy Dalton. So, they'll in the long run, you have Nick Foles and you try to put him on this display and keep him healthy to see what happens around the league. And you try to get Andy Dalton to make that position as competitive as possible. And then you try to make Justin Fields prepared so he can earn that right away from him.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a fascinating dynamic because Nick Foles, I want to say he's made $75 million in his career up to this point. He's made a ton of money. And he won a Super Bowl, and that's going to get you a big contract in Jacksonville. And, you know, obviously the lack of playing time, he wanted to get out of there. He had an injury. It just didn't go well. It's not a good team. So he comes to Chicago, and he gets the starting job. It was weird the way that worked out. It was like Matt Nagy just wanted to get to running his offense and went to it as fast as he could. And Nick Foles, you know, did not do well. It's as simple as that. And now he is sort of surplus to demand. And I think that they owe him money. He can collect the money. He costs so much to cut that you have to keep him. They wanted to trade him. He's got a right of refusal on that. He didn't want to go back to Philadelphia, supposedly. So there was a talk about the Jets. I don't know if that could ever happen. But I think that Nick Foles is in a really interesting situation because you're right, Tom. If you had an opportunity to trade him, if there were injuries around the league, he'd be a guy teams would probably seriously look at because he did win a Super Bowl. But he's also a guy that, you know, timing has to be there when you're looking for a quarterback. And the timing has – he hasn't played well, and there haven't been opportunities, and everybody's kind of moving on with their QB plan. So something has to change in that dynamic. As far as the Bears are concerned, I think you look at Justin Fields and you ask, I get it, you want him on the Mahomes plan, but Alex Smith was a Pro Bowl starter with the team who had been with the team. It wasn't like you had a guy and that you brought in and Dalton and is just with the team for the first time and learning the offense and learning a different offense, frankly, than the one you're going to probably run with Justin Fields. So it's a really weird dynamic. I know Matt Nagy talks very optimistically and positively about it, but when you stop and think about the three guys in the room, it's a weird dynamic. It just is strange.
Yep.
It's June the 17th. It's not July the 17th.
Right.
And it's surely not August the 17th.
It's not September 17th either.
Well, it's definitely not September 17th. Thank goodness. I'm not ready. I don't want to snap our fingers and be in football season that quick, even though I love football just as much as you two guys do. They don't have a plan necessarily in place because I don't think they ever thought they were going to be in this position. I don't think they thought that they were going to be able to get Justin Fields. And so they're not really sure yet. And that's okay because they don't have to know right now. Again, it's June 17th. I get why the media is asking the questions they're asking. But right now, on June 17th, this makes all the sense in the world. And, you know, actually, the Bears might be in a great spot with Foles, assuming he has the intestinal fortitude and wants to still continue to play football and not just cash checks. Because there is going to be a team that's going to be down a quarterback. And somebody's going to need a guy who's played. Oh, and the Bears have a guy who's won a Super Bowl. There might actually be some value for the Bears in Nick Foles.
There's no intrinsic value to this question.
The odds are 60-1 that Phil Mickelson, now 51 years old, could win the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines and become just the sixth player ever to win a career Grand Slam. Would you wager a penny on it? Are you cheering for Lefty? Do you have a pick to win it?
I would love to see Lefty win it. I think it'd be great for golf if he won it. I wouldn't spend a penny, not a penny, on that possibility. I think he had his moment for this year, and I don't think that he's going to be the guy that wins it, although it is, you know, kind of a local thing. You know, it would be great for golf, and it would be great to see him be one of the guys. You know, I can't believe there's that few guys that have won the Grand Slam, and the names of those golfers are all Hall of Fame golfers. So, yeah, I'm cheering for Lefty, but in terms of picking to win it, I'm probably going to go with Rory McIlroy. I always like the Irish. It's nothing to do, nothing to do with anything other than cheering on an Irishman.
Well, you've been reading about they're going to take away the green books from the PGA players, so then Rory is a big proponent of that, which
right.
surprises me. You know, I think it's the whole Phil Mickelson, unfortunately, is being overshadowed by the argument on the PGA between Bryson DeChambeau and Bruce Koepka, because these guys, too, have this intertangled, weird little fight. And then you get the crowd to come and contribute and yell the stupid things that you hear being yelled by people that it just embarrasses me when I hear them yelling on a golf course during the weekend. One thing about
you're the man, Tom. You're the man.
Mashed potatoes,
light the wick. You know, I tell you what, if you're a really sensible person and you've ever yelled anything just to hear yourself yelling at a golf course, I can't get it. I just don't get it. But one thing about Phil Mickelson, this is a very walkable course.
Yeah,
and you always have to consider fatigue and 51 in the fourth day of the tournament for a guy like Phil Mickelson. And that was one of the things when he won the championship the other day, that was also a very walkable course. And you really have to take that into consideration because of the fatigue factor. It affects these guys if they don't have enormous energy flow or adrenaline flow during that last day and a half of the tournament. So Phil Mickelson, I think there's going to be some carryover adrenaline. There's going to be carryover support. That's, you know, he's super familiar with that course. I've been out there a couple times. And
it's his backyard.
Yeah. Yeah, but they right down below the cliffs, if you ever look, that's called Black's Beach. It's a great surfing spot. The walk down, the walk down is horrific.
Do you play golf and then get on your surfboard with the clubs?
No, I've never played golf there. I've only seen the course, but I've walked down there with my surfboard. But however, getting back to Phil, it is a really walkable course. So I do think that's one of the things that can keep him in contention, especially because the first day of the championship that he just won, he didn't blow the top off of it.
Right.
He had to fight his way back up those next 3 years. And then at the end of the second day, he became near the top of the leaderboard and then was able to, you know, continue and play at that pace. So, you know, there's a lot of things in his favor. The crowd is going to be in support of Phil. I hope he's far enough away from DeChambeau and Koepka so the people that are yelling at those guys don't affect him. And so it'll be interesting. Hey, who over 45, 50 years old isn't pulling for Phil Mickelson? I think, you know, he's
51 now.
He's like the fountain of youth.
So what I'm hearing is you don't want DeChambeau and Koepka in the last pairing on Sunday at Torrey Pines. Is that what I'm hearing, Tom?
Oh, it would be great if that was the case.
Well, we'd be hearing it all afternoon.
But as an old man, as an old man myself, I'm pulling for the old man.
Oh, listen, Mickelson. I love Phil. I've told the story in there. I had a run-in with Phil at the Ryder Cup out at Medina. It was fantastic. Phil's a good guy. I like Phil. I've bet on dumber things than betting on Phil Mickelson to win the U.S. Open. But if you want to know where my money would be, it would be on, for the same reasons Tom has mentioned, home course, Xander Schauffele. This is his home course. Yep. He grew up there. He's due. He's a good player. That's the guy that I would pick, and he's about 18-1. You know, he's got double-digit odds to win, so that's where my money would go over the weekend. And I'd have to get it in soon because they'll be teeing off by the time we're signing off. They'll be teeing off.
Yeah, make your wagers. All of them will count. And we're going to break it all down. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw. We have Tom Thayer this morning on Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.